Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. You can follow me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. And I'm joined, as always, by John Crumpler. And you can find him on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. John, hey, it's good to talk to you.
It's good to be back, Mark. We're in the slug of the off season officially.
Yeah, so we have tonsillitis when it comes to participation with the Texans Talk Podcast. We just do it whenever we want.
Hey, you know what? I think we're doing our best. We're publishing episodes as the stories resolve, and I gotta say, we're still putting some good articles out there on the Texans Wire.
Yeah, and I always appreciate OTAs because even though it is, you don't get the hitting and all that stuff and the pads, you still get to see just how the players are responding mentally, and you get to see how the veterans mesh with the rookies, or I should say, how the rookies are then integrated among the veterans. So it's exciting. I like, you know, of all the spring sports, you got basketball, you got baseball, hockey wraps up. My favorite is OTAs.
I think it's been really interesting to get all these quotes from the veterans, see what they think of the rookies. I mean, we had a good idea of who we were onboarding from pre-draft interviews and from their processes. But now to see them in the locker room, and of course, no one's gonna speak badly about people. But when a veteran really opens up about someone, I'm inclined to believe that. I think that's very authentic.
One word that I have noticed that they have used relative to the veterans, I mean, relative to the rookies, is the word sponge. I've noticed that has been used a lot, is that, you know, so-and-so.
Yes,
is
no,
sponge.
No, definitely. Steven Nelson said that. Christian Kirksey said that about, I think both people might have been talking about Jalen Petrie, or it might have been Garrett Wallow was included in both. But yeah, they're definitely complimentary, or at least trying to create the idea that the rookies are just really there to learn.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, though, is the messaging, too, that these guys are using a particular phrase. You had Steven Nelson said it about Jalen Petrie, and then you also had who else was a sponge? Christian Kirksey says it about Christian Harris. So that's what I'm saying, is that the messaging is also on point on how they publicly talk about these rookies.
Yeah, I mean, it's all good things, and it's the stuff we'd want to hear, especially for a team that does have so many veterans, Mark.
Yeah, and that's really what I think fans want to see, is the team kind of, you know, you had to field a roster in 21, which is why the average age was 26 years old, the oldest in the NFL. You know, like I said, you had to field a roster, you had to get through the year. But I think this is part of the optimism that fans are feeling but may not be able to articulate. And that's that the team is being turned over from just the veterans to get you through the, frankly, expansion year. And now the keys are being turned over to the young guys. And I think that's what may be generating the optimism that fans can't exactly articulate.
Oh, it's a transition point, especially. I think the hardest part is it's hard to describe the despair that was felt last season, because the team was bad and there wasn't really anything to talk about. And then this year, I don't think we know how good the Houston Texans are going to be. We'd like to think they're going to be better, but, you know, the odds say that it'll likely be another rebuilding year. But there is this distinct, just this brim of hope that wasn't present in that lost 2020 Bill O'Brien firing season, or the 2021 David Culley veteran laden season. And it feels good to be back at that spot.
Yeah, I think in 2020 there was way too much expectation put upon the quarterback's ability to spread the ball around. And in 2021, there were no expectations at all. It was just this storm cloud hanging over the organization with the quarterback situation. And then you also had this rookie coach who's 65 years old, who had never been a coordinator. And then you don't know, you can't really point to a face of the franchise at all. It was like they got in the DeLorean or used the Infinity Gauntlet and went back to 2002, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it was... I can't, Mark. The DeLorean is a great comparison.
Yeah, they would have to have been like three DeLorean charter buses to go back to 02 with that squad. But, yeah, and I think, like I said, I think that's what it is, even if the fans can't articulate it. And I know that the fans, you know, kind of feel bad that they have optimism because, you know, you have the usual people with you know, just kind of the implements in the media. They're like, what are you doing? Why are you feeling good about this? It's a bad team. Look at what the odds makers say. They're not going to win four games. It's Lovey Smith, part three. It's not going to work. But it's that optimism of what if Stingley has some highlight plays you can put on YouTube? And then Jordan Bunn talks about it. What if you've got John Metchie, like in that article you wrote, and he's hauling in 55 passes for 650 yards and 6 to 8 touchdowns. He at least wins somebody a fantasy week or even a daily fantasy. What if Damian Pierce just takes control of the running back by committee? He's the chairman of it by the end of the year. There's going to be optimism at the end of the year, more so than there was at the end of last year. And I think that's what fans are feeling.
And those things, I think something that they all kind of sum up is, one, they're fun things, but two, the presence of those things, Mark, you said even if they're not winning, you can win because of that. If John Metchie wins someone a fantasy matchup and explodes, that likely leads to a really good game for the Texans. If Damian Pierce has a dominant season, that means the Texans are controlling the tempo of the game. You're right, it's a totally different spot from last year, and it's these compounding factors, especially coming from a vacuum of less hope. But I'm excited for the team. I like everything I'm hearing from OTAs.
Yeah, and Lovey Smith, I think, has also infused some optimism as well, just with the way that he has just his steady approach. But what the Texans have been doing throughout the course of offseason workouts is they've kind of been backfilling their roster with veterans. They bring in cornerback Fabian Moreau. You've got the Buffalo boys in Mario Addison and Jerry Hughes, a Sugarland Stephen F. Austin native. I mean, alumnus, by the way. And so how do you feel about the way that they've kind of backfilled their roster with some of these veteran guys? Oh, and then one that happened on Wednesday that they take Deshaun Hamilton, he's out, and I think Chad Beebe's nephew, they signed him. So how do you feel about these moves?
With the veteran strategy, I mean, the veteran strategy has been a big part of what Nick Caserio wants to do in Houston. They're bringing in not just players, but men, individuals that they trust to have in the locker room and to help create that culture. And they're really betting on that, putting the rookies, the talented young guys that they're bringing in and supplementing that with these types of roster fillers is going to work out. And at this point in the season with the guys they're signing, I loved signing the two Buffalo defensive linemen. And I liked the Fabian Morales signing just because you're buffering positions that you know you're not going to find a high-quality starter at. You don't have a young guy to play there. But by virtue of rolling the dice and trying to find someone who can take those minutes, you put Jonathan Grenard in a better position to succeed. If your cornerback two is better, you put Derek Stingley in a better position to succeed. I would love for them to go out and sign a safety. I mean, Landon Collins, I wrote about, he's sitting out there from Washington, and to maybe find one more starting caliber player, especially at that safety position, Deshaun Gibson would be too. But right now I can't fault the strategy because this is who the Texans are.
Yeah, and I like the way that they went out and got guys who could flourish in this particular system, like Addison and Hughes, because they played in a variation of what Lovey Smith is coaching in Buffalo under, you know, Sean McDermott, but you got Leslie Frazier, who comes from the Lovey Smith school. But they've got a familiarity with the system, and their defensive line guys, they played with their hand in the dirt their whole careers pretty much, and they just want to be able to react, to get upfield, and to not have to read so much. And maybe they could contribute and have some good snaps for you, and they provide an effective pass rush. And they're not too threatening enough, I don't think, that they would be a progress stopper for Jonathan Grenard. Instead, they could compliment him. Instead, they're in the classroom showing him, watching film. Hey, you know, young buck, look at this. Look at this right here. You know, why don't you do this? Use this move, and so forth. And so, and then you got Jock Cesari, who comes over, the assistant defensive line coach from the Bills. And so now he's the defensive line coach here. So really, Addison and Hughes are kind of like his assistant coaches, and they're kind of instilling a little bit of his values. And that's why, and then Kenyon Jackson, the assistant defensive line coach who was there with Lovie Smith at Illinois. And I think you're going to see an instilling of how these guys should play in the Tampa 2. And that's what makes it exciting with some of the names that they brought in. And then, hey, I you know, they talked about it.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say on that note that there's a lot of criticism that the Texans won't lean into just bringing in a lot of young guys. But I think with where they are, there is some value in putting a C-plus player on important positions because it puts other rookies in a position to succeed. You're right. It's like having more assistant coaches. Yes, you're losing out of the chance at a superstar, but that chance is so low that, I mean, the Texans gave up a lot of draft capital for each and every rookie that they've had under the Nick Caserio tenure, both the 2021 class and the 2022 class. So it makes sense to really try to provide the best possible infrastructure for those players and put them in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and what would a superstar do for you right now anyway? Unless it's a quarterback, I don't think it's going to do anything for you, because what if you had Deebo Samuel? Oh, nice. Now you win 5 games. So I don't think they're...
Did not want Deebo.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a superstar out there, I think. No, other than a quarterback that's really going to fix the problems with the Houston Texans, because it's the roster. You know, if I could be the James Carville of Houston Texans talk, that's what I would say, is I would say it's the roster, stupid.
Mark, what's up with the I thought food references were your thing.
Yeah, I got food references cooking, don't worry about it. But really there's what Casario's doing is he's replenishing the depth on the roster, because you made me cut the topic and it's actually good, but I'll bring it up anyway. I wanted to talk about who are the 4 players from 2019 to 2020 that have yet to take the next step, and or who have to take it this year. And you're like, hey, I don't even know why we're talking about this, because there's such a dearth of players. I don't even know that we could come up with 4. And that's true. And that just shows you what happened to how bare the cupboard is and where the depth went with this team. Is those 2019, that 2019 draft, aside from Titus Howard, bombed. The 2020 draft was just almost like throwing darts at a dartboard or just doing auto sim on Madden. And so there went your depth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the team, the cupboard's bare right now, and you're right. No one player is going to make an impact. But, Mark, there is someone who, if he turned into a superstar, you mentioned, he could. Davis Mills, all eyes are on him at OTAs. Do you like what we're hearing about Davis Mills and the fact that it's quiet on that front? Unless players are asked about him, we're not really hearing a peep from Davis. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's good, because you also don't hear, well, Davis Mills overthrew this guy, or Davis Mills struggled here, or Jeff Driscoll's getting more snaps, or Kyle Allen this. You're not hearing anything about it. Instead, you're hearing that it's Davis Mills' team, even though for now that's basically a punchline across the, you know, national media. But you're hearing that
it's a meme.
Yeah. Yeah, that Davis, you're hearing that Davis Mills, it's his team, well, his offense, and that his leadership is growing. It's subtle. He knows where to put guys in position. And even Rex Burkhead talked about that. Was it Mills was telling him where to line up and stuff? And even though Burkhead, you know, he's in his 30s, been in the league since 2013, he's like, what is he talking about? Oh, no, he's right. That's right. So Mills is knowing where everybody's supposed to line up, which is what a really good quarterback does, is he knows, captain of any side of the ball, is he knows what everybody's assignment is, and that's where Mills is going. And you figured Mills would be able to do that, given that he's from Stanford and he brings a more intellectual side to the game.
Yeah, I don't just want to say he's from Stanford. I think the quarterbacks will make the National Football League. They're definitely intellectual guys, but you're right. That seems to be time and time again what the other players are coming back to. Mills is being the responsible leader, kind of how what you would expect from a veteran quarterback. He knows the responsibilities. He knows the playbook. He's trying to hold his teammates accountable and get everyone on the same page for the season. I've been really, really pleased with what people have been saying about him out of camp, and I'm honestly very okay with the local media not dissecting his every throw like we're seeing right now in Washington, for example, with Carson Wentz, where every miss is highlighted.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with just the media markets in general and how things get covered. You know, in Houston... But even so, I don't think that it's that big of a deal because Davis Mills is solid. And that's what I feel like you get out of him is consistency. You know, whether or not it's high level or not, whatever. But I'm saying he's consistent and he bounces back. Those are his two biggest strengths.
And they don't need him to be a lot more than that in 2022, I could argue. The way that they're preaching they want to win, which is a little roll your eyes. They want to run the ball. They say they want to keep a fullback. They rave about all three of their running backs, even though I think people around the league would say Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead is a pretty bare running back room. I know everyone's excited about Damian Pierce, but if that's how they want to win games. Consistency, at a mid-level quarterback, they're going to be able to do that, especially if how much Lovie's defense is preaching about forcing turnovers. If they can force the ball to turn over, keep time of possession, score just enough where Davis is playing mistake-free football and letting his playmakers like Nico Collins, John Metchie, and, of course, Brandon Cooks go out there and make plays, could be more wins, certainly more than the 4.5 win total they're projected.
Yeah, and it really comes down to just having a run game that can control the tempo of the game, because if they don't have that, you know, that was kind of their problem last year, was it was all on Davis Mills. Way to go. I mean, it's all on this third-round rookie. And he's supposed to lead the offense like he's a superstar quarterback or something, you know, and that you kind of get what you deserve. But that's why I posted on Texans Wire on Wednesday that the Texans were absent from Judy Batista's NFL.com list of teams that significantly helped their quarterbacks in the offseason. Because I think they should be on there. Because if you're going to say the Jets, who did this and did that, are significantly helped Zach Wilson, then by the same definition, I think that the Texans significantly helped Davis Mills, because now you got an offensive guard who's kind of an enforcer of new offensive line coach George Warhop and A.J. Cann. You've got a first-round guard in the Aggie, in Atascocita High School alumnus, Kenyon Green. You went and got him a second round receiver, albeit he's coming back from an ACL injury, but nevertheless, he's a good complement with what you got in Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins. You got him a young running back in Damian Pierce, who we raved about and other people raved about and other people consider a steal on day three. So, you know, by the definition, if the Jets significantly helped Zach Wilson, well, then the Texans significantly helped Davis Mills this offseason. They're not just throwing him out there with no
weapons. I would agree with that, but just to play devil's advocate here, I can see why the Jets are making that list. You know, we added John Mechie, who is somewhere between 7th and 8th best wide receiver on people's draft boards. The Jets went out and got Garrett Wilson, who was probably the closest thing to the number one receiver in this class. We added Damian Pierce, who was a darling from his Senior Bowl performance and really underutilized at Florida. The Jets went and got Breece Hall, who everyone has already seen dominated Iowa State. He was the best back. We got Keegan Catoriano, you know, fine blocking tight end and a new run scheme. The Jets went and got Jeremy Ruckert from Ohio State, who some thought was the best tight end in the draft. And then they added a bunch of free agents. So it's not fair. And I agree, I've done so much to help Davis Mills. But I think that we're really more familiar with these guys in the national media. And my hope is that by the time we're a month into this season, people are going to say, oh, shoot, we totally missed what Houston did because we were so distracted by these big names. But Houston put the right pieces around that guy.
Yeah, it's going to take a strong start in order for them to get noticed or beat some good teams along the way. Because, hey, I mean, they're going to have a lot of early game time slots and you've only got one Thursday night game, which admittedly, though, will be against the Philadelphia Eagles. So it's not like, I mean, even, you know, it's not like it's going to be against the Jaguars or something.
Oh, God, the Eagles.
What?
I just called the Eagles the Phillies. I'm totally in baseball mode, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, they'll have the Phillies and then – I think the Astros are going to play the Eagles and that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. They're going to do it at the Summit. At
the Summit?
Yeah. The Summit where the Houston Rockets used to play. That's still crazy.
Yeah. I'm totally sure.
Yeah. That's crazy to me that's now a church. Or that the Houston Rockets used to play in a church or whatever. But it's just crazy.
A church?
Yeah. Look it up. I'm pretty sure. You look it up right now. Fact check me right now. The Summit where the Houston Rockets used to play ball is now where Joel Osteen has his mega church services. Look it up right now.
Lakewood Church Central Campus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Dude, that is a rich church.
So that's what I mean.
$27 million?
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Holy. The Astros are.
Mark, are you a Rockets?
Do what?
I was going to ask. The podcast needs to know. Are you a Rockets fan?
No, but I'm not a fan of really any NBA team. I have respect for the Rockets, and I'm not going to be stupid enough to badmouth the Rockets publicly. You know what I mean? Let me tell you a story. There was a guy who ran, let's say, a site for an NFL team in a city known for its barbecue. Okay? This individual said that the city's barbecue was like third place or something like that. I mean, that's just unforgivable. And so that's what I mean, is I'm not a fan of the Rockets. I know a lot about the Rockets, and I can tell you about Ralph Sampson and Akeem Olajuwon, by the way, before he became Hakeem in, I believe it was the 90-91 season. You know, Vernon Maxwell, Mad Max played great defense against Michael Jordan, and that was part of the argument of if they ever met in the finals, if Jordan ever retired, what would the 94 finals look like, let's say? would Mad Max have been able to shut down Jordan? So, I mean, I know a lot about the Rockets, you know, but not a fan, but not a hater. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. I thought you were going to say you were a Mavericks or a Spurs fan. So that's the real reason. Was not trying to get you to badmouth.
Nah. No, I'm not a Mavericks or a Spurs fan. You know, I think it's great that they're in Texas and you've got that, you know, triple rivalry thing going on. But no, I'm not a fan.
Oh, it's fantastic.
What?
I said it's fantastic. It leads to some great rivalries. Like for me, little personal anecdote. My mom went to Wake Forest, obviously. Tim Duncan, San Antonio Spurs, great. Top 10 NBA player of all time, don't at me. She's a big Spurs fan. My sister lives in Dallas. I'm a Rockets fan. We always get to trash talk each other the whole season. It's great.
Yeah, it is. Didn't they do something screwy where like the Rockets are in – a different division than the Mavericks? Like, they can't be right.
I don't think so. I think they're both in the Southwest division.
Better be.
I'm going to look that up.
Maybe it's Oklahoma City that's in a different division, but they're just up I-35 from Dallas. But they're in the Pacific Northwest or some kind of crazy stuff. But, you know.
It's because they were the Sonics and they didn't realign it.
Yeah.
That's why. So they're still in the Northwest division.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel how Lovie Smith is handling the injury news that comes out?
In what? Can you describe to the audience what you mean like that before I talk
about
it?
Well, they asked about, you know, John Metchie, and he said that he's doing better. He's getting better every day. And that, you know, Jonathan Grenard hasn't taken a full team snap yet, but, you know, he's on the right track. Do you like how he's handling the injury questions? Not exactly running away from them, but still keeping it a little close to the vest and not letting people, I don't know, overreact.
Okay, that's what I thought that was happening, but I was really scared for a moment that was not. Oh, no, I like the coach speak, honestly, of injuries. I don't think that the public has a right to know exactly what your players are going through. There's no real reason for the team to share that information. So in my opinion, yes, talk about the good things about John Metchie, about Jonathan Grenard. But really, other than the media, we have to write stories. I don't mind that he's being pretty conservative about sharing players' timelines. As much as I would love to know exactly when they think John Metchie is going to be ready to suit up this season, to know exactly how severe they think Jonathan Grenard not practicing might be, all that does is create more noise, and this team's trying to rebuild. I'm happy they're keeping the focus on football.
Yeah, and I like how he's handling it too, where he gives you a little morsels, kind of like the ladies at Sam's with the free samples of, you know, the Hot Pockets or whatever. You know, you get your free samples. He's not an absolute grouch about it like Bill O'Brien was, where you wouldn't get any free samples at all. It'd be like if you went to Sam's and asked for one and the old lady with the plastic gloves slapped your hand instead.
Yeah, it's an appropriate amount. I would agree. I think Lovie is he's more generous with the media than O'Brien was. Maybe not to the Cully level, which was a little over the top, but I think it's very professional. It's how I want a pro football team to be run. He gives some valuable insight. He talks about his players, but no, we don't need to know about every injury, every knickknack that guys are running into.
I love when David Cully was mic'd up and stuff. That was some of the best material. Just even his press conferences, too, the way that he would just lump dependent clauses and prepositional phrases together that kind of went nowhere. You know, they'd mic him up and he'd say, "That's what I'm talking about. When you come out here and practice every day, you need to know that what we expect is where you're coming from and what I want from you. That's a level of consistency that we need."
I think David Cully would be great on a podcast. Can you imagine if he had a weekly show? Like, I wish he'd just come back to the Texans and join their the Texans TV crew, because he
Yeah,
was great in those
either
segments.
that
It
or
was.
the Chiefs ought to get a hold of him, or the Ravens ought to get a hold of him, or the Eagles should get a hold of him, or hey, Texas A&M should get a hold of him. Just somebody should have him on weekly.
He's a budding star. Budding star, this very likable older dude, should not have been a head coach, but was he great to be the face of the Texans and kind of distract from things? Absolutely. And I think that's part of the reason why I love the operation feels a little more serious under Lovie Smith.
Yeah, and really his wins were significant from a personal standpoint too. He got with the week one win, he got his first win of his first game ever. He won in Nashville effectively close to his hometown. He swept the Jaguars, so he got a sweep in, and then he beat a team that was really in the run for the playoffs in the Los Angeles Chargers, absolutely wrecked their season with that win. So he got a quality win against a quality team. I mean, his four wins, they were legit.
Mark, can we go on the record and say that this is a pro David Culley podcast?
Yes.
Okay. Because it was previously a pro Kyle Hamilton podcast, and I think we do need something that we irrationally stand for again. And I'm okay with that being David Culley.
Yeah, because like I said, I mean,
Just not as the head coach.
yeah, I mean, Cully, he took the job, he knew what he was getting into, and he weathered the storm, and here they are now. It's a new day with Lovie Smith, and now we'll see what happens. They have after this, they have organized, they have mandatory mini camp next week. So at that point, if Laremy Tunsil doesn't show up, you can get mad. Malik Collins, I think he showed up this week because he talked about,
No, he's been there. He missed the first week, but
Because
yeah,
now
he's been there the past
he's
2 weeks.
number
It's just
96.
Tunsil's the only one.
Yeah. So next week you can get mad if Tunsil doesn't show up and all of that. But that's why these mandatory mini camps, they're the last, they're like the last few chips and dip in the salsa in the white queso before you hear the fajitas sizzling right out of the kitchen and through the dining room to your table. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mark, are you trying to make me more hungry right now?
Yeah. Yeah,
For
and have a
the
patented
podcast
food
audience,
analogy
I
too.
forgot to eat dinner before recording. Dude, fajitas would be so good. I forgot to eat dinner before recording this. So,
Oh yeah.
Mark, let's wrap this one up, brother.
Okay. Well, hey, you're the one who wraps it up. So, what do you tell the folks, John? Wait, follow me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane.
That's
Follow him on
true.
Twitter at John H. Crumpler. Follow the Texans Wire at the Texans Wire. Set your homepage to texanswire.usatoday.com.
Everybody, have a great morning. Let's have a day.